the needs are there. So we're talking really trade-off. But it's not really a bean counting process. So there is some kind of coordination that's really needed between planning, budgeting, policy formulation, and actually the implementation of the budget itself. On the preparation side, it is really the executive ultimately that takes the decision, and there is your cabinet and prepare and finalize their budget. Then period four, which is from 1 December 31st of March, is where the actual finalization of the budget is actually then taking place. Now, period one has got three kind of processes that are taking place. The first one there is you really close, like in the, like now I'm taking it, the 2007-18 financial year will then would have reached its conclusion there. Then there's deadline for the submission of financial statements. We get provincial and expenditure review data that we consolidate basically during that time. But at the same time, basically, the 2008 and 9 budget must now be implemented during that time. So based on the performance in many cases or in the previous year, some of these budgets are also really looked at, but mainly they are being captured onto the system there and for implementation. But what happens from our side is Sandra and her team basically have a division, a DORA, basically Division of Revenue Act workshop that they have during that period, where she outlines in detail what are the expectations basically that DORA would place on all and sundry in terms of the implementation of the budget. But then during this period as well is a period where we also start to look at what the President said in his State of the Nation address, because he spoke, for example, the 8th of February. If you think about it, by the 8th of February, the budget is already being finalized. So what happens actually there is what are the issues that can still be taken into account within that particular budget, but also what is the long-term vision from that. So during that period, we also start to analyze in quite a bit of detail that and how that would then reflect it into the new budget then there. Then the provincial budget and expenditure review is actually for us in our unit, one of our flagship projects, because that's where we analyze the performance basically of provincial governments there in terms of spending, and where information is available, non-financial information, also performance with that. Now for this year, we're not going to publish one, but what we will do is to consolidate all the information basically and actually come back to the NCOP and make quite detailed presentation around what is happening with those particular budgets there. Then coming out of the cabinet, Lokota, basically, is we then look at the budget priorities. These are the discussions that are now taking place in whether it's in 4x4s, 10x10s, or min-max, and all of that. So we go through that particular process in quite a bit of detail. The budget council has got also its budget council of Hota, where it actually then goes and discusses all of that basically there. And this then culminates basically in cabinet and an expanded cabinet, really. In fact, what the work that is done here will then eventually culminate in a decision taken by cabinet and extended cabinet towards October, when we're going to present the medium-term budget policy statement. But what also happens is provinces submit draft budgets to National Treasury on the 31st of August. Basically, these are budgets with existing baselines and with clear guidelines on what to do in terms of reprioritization and all of that. So before we even add money, we also start to assess a bit of those particular budgets there. Then period three from the 1st of September towards the 30th of November, we now take, the cabinet takes its decision, the extended cabinet takes its decision on the division of revenue, and then it, that those decisions are then reflected in the medium term by the policy statement. What we hope to have done last year, and we hope to do basically this year, is to see whether when the medium-term budget policy statement is tabled, whether we can't table a draft division of revenue bill, and even for that matter, a draft NXAE, or at least a explanatory memorandum there. I think that can be quite useful, because then we can then come back to the committee actually as a hearing immediately after the MTBPS to just sensitize the committee on what the priorities are and how these would be factored into provincial budgets. And we can do that quite early, basically. But at the same time, during this time, there are MTEC, medium-term expenditure committee hearings that are taking place in provinces. Now, what Linda and her team does, they basically attend these hearings to at least see to what extent some of these discussions reflect the priorities that were discussed in the intergovernmental fora, the 10x10s and all of that, basically. Then, during this time as well is when the adjustment estimate is basically tabled. And maybe this adjustment estimate must be actually informed by a rigorous analysis, because I think flowing from the previous discussion where you add money and you probably know that, you know, some of these provinces or departments will not be spending some of the money, does it make sense to basically add that to that? But nevertheless, that is the third stage or the third period there. Then what happens after the medium-term budget policy statement? Now, we in fact, in period three, we actually inform provinces of their allocation. We inform them, basically, within that allocation letter, we explain in quite a bit of detail what the priorities are, and that informs, basically, the revisions to those particular basis. So they use those as a guide, basically, to then determine their budgets. Right? Now, they submit these budgets basically to us on the 1st of December as drafts, and we consolidate all of that information and we analyze that information. Then Julinda again and her team, from about probably the first week of this, the first 2 weeks in December, they call in the provincial treasuries, where the treasuries come and present these budgets to us. So we assess and we make recommendations and we look at whether these budgets reflect the priorities of government, basically. Then we make recommendations and they go back and go and, so some of them take into account some of our recommendations, others don't, which is basically, we see it as their right to do. They can decide what to do. In fact, then they come back again in January. And in January, when they come back, we again assess those budgets and give recommendations. In fact, the past, at least for the time that I worked at the Treasury, all the recommendations that we've made to Treasury is that they have ignored. They have tended to come back in the adjustment budget and fix them out of their own. Because what we told them in the beginning of the year is what will happen, actually then happens. So we say, now why don't you really listen from the beginning in any case, in terms of what they have. But when we assess these budgets as well, we also look at the adequacy of funding sometimes. Because sometimes we may have thought that the priority would be costed and this would be the extent at which it should be funded. But when we look at spending patterns, we look at the budget, the draft budgets, and that, then we make recommendations basically to the minister. And probably in some cases we've got what is known as post-MTBPS kind of revisions that we make to the budget framework as well, taking into account what we've seen in some of these budgets, basically there. Then we also then have what is known as a Section 32 report. So that Section 32 report, which is the third quarter Section 32 report, basically, that is available during that time, we also then use to to see how that really links to the new budget that will be tabled later in the or rather in February and March. Thereafter, the provinces then table the budget. And in fact, where we talk about further priorities, let me for example explain that a bit. The president then has got also the State of the Nation address that takes place. And we assess that State of the Nation address as well. And probably in that State of the Nation address, there may be one or two priorities that were not probably taken into account. And some of that are then reflected in there. Then we start again with the preparation for the implementation of the new budget. Now these are, we call them events, because there are big gatherings and people eat nice food during those times. These are the kinds of interactions that actually take place during the budget process. We've got long bilaterals with departments there. We've got 10 by 10, 4 by 4. We've got the cabinet of Hotai in July, provincial visits by the intergovernmental relations team. We were the budget council of Hotai, where these are fleshed out again and discussed in quite a bit of detail. Then we've got the second round of visits, basically, and where provinces have their MTEC processes and where we also make our input in there. Then we've got really discussions on the division of revenue itself there. You've got joint min-max, you've got extended cabinet, then the rest is what we then know really happens. And these are just a summary of all the budget documentation that is available there, that could be used. Then the provinces themselves also use, basically can use those particular budget documents, but in addition to that, basically, is also the strategic and performance plan of departments that are available here. Then the Section 32 monthly reports that are also available for that, and the annual report. I think I'll stop there, and if I can just talk to the formula.
I should just try and explain the formula in simple terms. When one looks at this first, it might look complicated, but it's not. But at the same time, if I'm explaining too much of something that people already know, they must let me know, so that I don't waste your time and ask the questions that you would like to ask. But in essence, what one has put here, perhaps we should have taken out the bullet. Ignore the bullet once you get to the second line. In essence, what the province gets as its allocation is a product of this formula. Firstly, if you just look at the 0.51, which in essence in percentage terms means that 51% of the equitable share formula in total gets allocated to education, right? That 0.51. The 0.62, which relates to the health component in the second or third row, 0.26, sorry, means that 26% of the total equitable share that all provinces get is distributed as part of the formula in respect of health, which is the second largest service that provinces provide. 14% is distributed on the basis of the proportion or the percentage of the population that resides in each one of the provinces. My accountant now has got the biggest Yes. So, and then 3% is the share of the population that resides in the province of the 40% of the population in the country that is defined as poor. 1% is distributed in proportion to the contribution of each province to the gross domestic product, what people call GDPR. And then each province receives 11% of 5%, which is distributed equally across all provinces. So, if you add the 51% plus 26 plus 14 plus 3 plus 1 plus 5%, you would get 100%, which is like the total cost that gets spent among all provinces. Where do these percentages come from? The 51, 26. Those two are determined in terms of the average share of those two sectors in total provincial expenditure over the past 3 years, excluding conditional grant expenditure. So in other words, when we get all the expenditure in each one of the last 3 years, and we take out of its conditional grant, we then take the total expenditure on education in the 9 provinces and we divide it by total expenditure by all provinces. What we then get for each one of those 3 years, we divide by 3 so that we arrive at that 51%. Now, it's important to, we do the same in respect of health. It's important to bear in mind that the 51% excludes conditional grants. Because some of the debate that raises in provinces is that the Department of Education, and I think as education is they do this deliberately, they say, look, we are entitled to 51% of what the province can, because they're quite able to give 51%. Ignoring the fact that the 51% is 51% of total provincial expenditure, excluding conditional grants. They compare it to now what on average is roughly about, I think, 40-something%, which is now the percentage of education as a share of total expenditure in a province, in provinces, including in the denominator, the expenditure on them. Continental grant expenditure in all these sectors. About 42%. Now let me just, I'm going to just go through the things, at least some of them in detail, then the others I'll sort of, before I explain things that are obvious. So then the 51% education portion, each province's share of that is determined by 2 factors. It is determined by how many learners are enrolled in that province. As the 10th school day comes, on the 10th day when all registrations are done, schools get surveyed, Department of Education asks them to tell them how many learners they have. Hopefully truth gets told, and then on the basis of that 50% of the 51% of the education component would then be determined or shared among provinces on the basis of that. The other 50% would be distributed among the 9 provinces on the basis of how many people in that province are of the ages 0 to 17, which are the people who are supposed to be at school, 5 to 17, if they can't go to school at the age. So then those two, 50, half of the 51% divided in accordance with those two, would then give you what each province would get. It's not inconceivable that a province might have, therefore, a high school age cohort as measured in a census or community survey, if it measures that. But then, if those learners don't end up in school, they are not captured. So in a way, it does offset a bit of that to say, if your children don't end up in school, you mustn't get too much money. You must get as much as at least you have needed. That's what that component does. The health one is spread. The 26% is divided 25%, 25%. 25% gets given on the basis of people who have got medical aid. The presumption is that, by and large, people who have got medical aid wouldn't use public health care. But some of them do. And therefore, you use a smaller way for those people. However, because the other lot, people without medical aid, are, in fact, it should be WMA on the other side, the 75%. The 75% are people without medical aid. The presumption is that most people who don't have medical aid and therefore don't have, medical cover would choose to use the public health care. But still, a proportion of those people might be people who are wealthy. That's why it's not kind of 100%, but just that. A proportion of those people might be wealthy to buy medical health insurance or to pay doctors if they need to cash when they visit them. So that's what you then get for the health component. So in a way, what you would then find, the concept that Mr. Brown explained yet, maybe I should. If a province tends to have unemployment, and then for people without medical aid, it would get proportionally more people who don't have medical aid, and therefore would get a lot via that 75% component than a province whose population is employed and has got medical aid and stuff like that. Then the third component, which is simply to say, if you have got more people in your province, then the demand for public services should be higher, and therefore you must have more money to deal with them. And that's the basic component of the formula, which is distributes 14% of the applicable share in proportion to the size of the population that resides in a particular province. Then the component, the formula has got a we call this a kind of a redistributive component because the poverty component is attempts to say if you've got a larger share of the poor population in the country as defined in the income and expenses of it, therefore people who would fall in the first two quantiles, income quantiles, therefore you should get more money because these people wouldn't be able to pay for services. And indeed, when you have got free schooling, free medical health care for children, expectant for children under six, expectant mothers, a whole range of poverty targeting priorities, it makes sense then to give more money to a province that happens to have more people who are poor. The second last component recognizes the fact that a province like Gauteng that generates a lot of economic output would have to maintain the goods that lays the golden end. And therefore, it must maintain its roads, maintain a whole range of infrastructure that supports economic development. And therefore, in a way, you must return some of the taxes that you collect from Gauteng to Gauteng so that they can, and you would see in the other tables that follow in Annex E that Gauteng would get the largest share of that via that component. And then 5% of the equitable share is distributed equally where each province gets 11%. In a way, to say if you have got an administration, you've got a legislature, you've got a whole range of other services, government services that are not necessarily linked to the size of your population or anything, but you just have to run an administration. That's what that component seeks to do. Now, the outcome of that, once all of this is done, then I suppose if you have a question on this, or the logic here, or the lack of.
Okay. Any questions, comments,
I just want to check the age cohort 5 to 6. Does it include the 15? And also on the health one. If you think that the health one caters for, or if the assumption is that people who have got medical access to medical aid are employed, and those that are unemployed may not have access to medical aid. There are two issues that I think in real terms, although this may be seems to be arguing against my problem, there are people who are unemployed who may have access to medical aid. Wives, girlfriends, children who are on medical aid of main members. So I'm not sure whether this type of distortion is taken for or is taken into consideration by in the formula. Okay, I know the formula has been evolved, and I think there are still a lot of other information that must be put, particularly on areas. On this, like transport management systems and so on. My own question is that for road maintenance and building new roads, the issue of the number of cars in a particular province, do you go down to those kind of issues and put them in the front? Yeah, the number of roads and kilometers.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on the population of each province when we do the allocation. On the basis of the demarcation that we just had last year, on how did the treasury in terms of the allocation for the financial year, the group of provinces have been allocated. Malanga, for instance,
this 1%, does each province seller get 1% of its contribution, or how is it currently? Maybe not finish, you will come to why currently KZN is getting more than any other province. I'm not curious as to why it should get more, but what would be the difference in the other factors? That's what is nice when you kind of explain the things. Just on the school age cohort, it now includes, it used to be 6 to 7 years. It was taken down to 2-5 in recognition of it. Quite a good question, and the formula now responds to address. Some of the things actually one confuses in the way one explains that, because essentially that health component, it's not, we say people with medical aid, it's people who are covered by medical aid. So the way the question is framed in the questionnaire that FAI is to a household, how many members of people live in this household, or were in this household on this particular day? And of those members, how many are covered by medical aid? So if someone lives with his or his girlfriend or maybe his partner,
And the answer is two of them, two people are covered. If they leave children and they put all of them, then completely covered by them, that will capture all of them. Then the opposition is simply without them. The point one was making, and it's sometimes wrong with patients, is that generally people with income who then buy medical cover and cover the spouses and the partners and children. So in a way, it's a kind of a reasonably fair way to capture the challenge often is with formulae is between capturing everything and running the risk that you can have a complex formula. That was significant. In a way, you know, you can get the transport, then get the public works, let the special formula for them. The formula does not try to, in a way, capture explicitly the structure of that and the cost thereof. What it does is to sort of capture in a way relative need or relative demand. And then what is a fair way of distributing the resources that begins to at least put each one of the provinces in a position where they will be able to at least give most of their funds. And for functions that are simply relatively easy to cost and measure, like education and health, it's very explicit. But for other functions, it's not as explicit. But at the same time, components such as the economic component, poverty component, and stuff like that, it gives the phrase and the basic component. You have for people, these people have for certain characteristics. They are willing to pay or not to be able to pay for services is impacted by those characteristics. Then let's give you a bit more, and others let's give you something but not as much because your people might be able to pay for service. The other issue that then becomes important to complete the picture is the fact that there are also conditional terms. Several of which then begin to capture more explicitly these other things. And therefore, the line some cases are okay, like that. We are probably one of the few departments that communicates with the housing is another one. And I think we understand the situation. But you do get quite a number of grants that are becoming self-causing from the issues that there is a people know. But in essence, if you think about this as a constitutional grant, and your housing grant, various specific funds in housing, constitutional requirements, but also a name that exists out there. Your infrastructure grant for provinces means provinces of infrastructure, in particular transport. It then becomes an issue of whether the formula is the best way to capture the name, is getting to the point you're making about kilometers of roads, numbers of cars, and stuff like that. Now, you then begin, when you talk to those things, to encounter other issues. For instance, a province like Northern Cape probably score a lot with kilometers of road. But those kilometers of road are hard to use because they are. You can drive in the middle of the road for 20 kilometers without running and without colliding with another car on country. Whereas Southern will probably have the shortest road network, which is packed with cars at any given point in time, especially in the morning and afternoon. So you have to have factors for you pay them, then the formula gets complete. But those things are kept at the population that's used in the formula is F per the population estimated by F and the following the information. What FFA does or is able to do is that once there has been a victimization, they can go down to the enumerator area data and say this part which used to be in Southern is now, this part which used to be in Northwest is now in Southern. So the population of this with all these characteristics is now in Southern. So the data has been revised accordingly.
there may be imperfections, but not that much to our understanding. To answer the 1% question, so when I think we should just jump, let's just start with this slide, and then we'll go to the next one. Oh, yes. It's actually here. That shows that I'm beginning to have them. If you look at the 1%, so the 1% of the equitable share would be distributed, and you will love this, because Gauteng gets 63.7% of that part. Yeah. So you might just find people from Eastern Cape and KZN asking why you get so much. But perhaps as a counter to that, you should refer them to the column next to that on the left. And say, you see, because you've got too many people who fall in quantiles 1 and 2, in that case you get 20%, when in fact, roughly your population is about 13.5%. So you get 6.5% sort of above the average in respect to your population, so you use that as a basis. So in a way, what this column or the differences in this column already begin to show you, Mr. Ogun and everyone else, is that at the end, what an individual province gets as a percentage in the extreme right-hand column is the kind of an interaction, if you wish, between or among these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things, right? Gauteng might get a lot via the economic activity component, but it's a lot of 1%. So, which is not quite a lot. It's just a lot. But KZN, on the other hand, gets a lot of 51%, which is definitely a lot. So, the offsetting effect of the higher difference of 51% is much higher than the offsetting difference of a higher allocation that you get via 1%, as you told me. Right? Now, that's very important because at the end of the day, if in other words, you only had the economic component, you would walk away, or your profit would walk away with 33.7%. If you only had the property component, on the other hand, KZN would walk away with the biggest share of the component. And you kind of get those kinds of movements. But by and large, because most of the components use population, what you would find is that KZN gets a lot on everything. And it's not really a lot, relative to the fact that they have got people on which to spend this. Yes, to spend the money. Because you saw with the education component, as Mr. Brown showed you yesterday, that as much as Gauteng has got a larger share of the population in the country, but it's got a smaller number of learners than KZN. So in the end, that's what you get. I mean, we thought, and we hope you don't find, you didn't find this boring, but we thought, let's just at least demystify this stuff a bit. Because people hear formula, they think that this is a complex thing, so simple. Now, let me just make 2 points that I think are important. The first one is in respect of the priorities in the formula, and then what you get in provincial budget and other indicators. This becomes very important for you as our boss. In essence, what you see in this formula, for instance, is that KZN would get a lot of money for education. Presumably, followed by Eastern Cape, I think. Yes. Right? But when you then go, and I ask my colleagues, the provincial budget and expenditure review, which are still lost. When you then get the provinces to budget and then to spend their money. But when you then go into after the budget has been done and expenditure in care, you want to see whether Eastern Cape and KZN still come out at the top. You get mixed messages. Right? In other words, the resource allocation formula favors them in recognition of the fact that they've got more learners, they are poor and so on. But which means they say. What you then do, you would realize when you then look, and I hope that copies of this book will come, that KZN is in fact at least last year, and I think, yeah, in fact even in 2007-8, they have the lowest per learner expenditure compared to the rest of the country. Right? If you then go on to look at other indicators, and we have the information that shows for no fee schools how much each province subsidizes the school per learner in a textbook, and you see that Eastern Cape subsidizes the learners at the lowest rate, and I've mentioned it earlier, this basic minimum allocation. Now, I'm not saying this merely to repeat before, but it's to say, in a way, you get yet another disjunction. The approach to resource allocation says, let's recognize the fact that there are areas that are poor that cannot afford to pay. Give them the money, but then when you get to the province, the thinking kind of gets muddled. Eastern Cape would be 564 per learner, KZN by 629. Then you go, no, but this is serious, I mean, this is kind of a serious thing. You then go and you look at housing where people can afford to pay. It's 738. Now, surely you have a problem. You definitely have a problem. And I link to the point I was making about money getting returned. It's page 19 of this last year's provincial budget and expense budget. So in a way, when they bring the budget to the legislature, this is the kind of thing that ought to be kind of raised, say, now we know there are no schools. We know the province has got the poorest. You saw in that poverty component that the same case gets the highest proportion. How come we can then end up being the lowest subsidized, the lowest subsidy in the learner? For no people. We can never deliver. And of course, then it's no surprise that when you go on to the chapter, the part of the chapter that shows the proportion of learners that pass matric, that is 10K, is that the bottom? And fair enough, money is not everything. But surely if you don't put money into things that cost money, you're probably not going to get anything out. At the end. I thought I should make just that point. The other issue that I should approach cautiously, because I can see that the Honorable Chairperson and the two members of the board discussed the same thing, is the issue of allocation. When you allocate money, you keep allocating more to a place that does not spend. It's a difficult issue. It raises the following issue. If I start at the end, if you were to say, Eastern Cape is not going to spend the money, so don't give it. Now, you are probably taking inadvertently away pressure from the Eastern Cape government or everyone in Eastern Cape. Because, in a way, they will then not have under expense. Because they don't have money to understand. And therefore, they can turn around and say, we are not able to deliver houses here because we don't have money to deliver houses. Those people in Cape Town or Pretoria took the money away. That's the end result of it. But if you move a step back, I would think, where I see the
safest thing to do is to indicate the intent at the beginning. In other words, when you deal with division of revelation, yes, you probably do want to say this in case, and then the case of and whatever other problems fall in the second. Your needs are vast. And by our assessment, we think that you, relative to the total resources that the country can muster, and your needs, this is what we think you deserve. So that the intent is very clear, and everyone is treated equitably, which is very important in terms of this kind of thing. There must be an impression of fairness in the way everyone is treated in the beginning. What then, I think, would be the best thing to do is immediately then during the course of the year, say to them, demonstrate that you are going to use money. And when there is then evidence that they are not going to be able to use money, this stopping of money and reallocation clauses and the gazetting of the money must then happen. But it must happen very early. It must happen very early in the final. After the first quarter, second quarter, signs should be there. The moment expenditure is zero, but then everything gets divided by the remaining number of months, and they say, we'll send all of it, which is the point you're making, and so forth. Then you can begin to keep, because it then takes away the problem for you to put it all in the same case. I love it, I come from there, but anyway, I thought I should just say this.
Just had a look at the numbers just to get some comfort to myself for the importance of the local government equitable share. And I saw that for the numbers that you've got in one table there in the NXW1, grew from 7.7 billion in 2004-05 to 15.6 billion in 2008-09, and will be increasing to 2010-11 to around 25 billion rand. So quite a very important a step up in the local government equitable share in terms of what becomes available in the vertical division of revenue. The first couple of slides of this presentation is just a little bit of background of where the equitable share originates from, and basically in terms of section 214 and 227 of the Constitution, that provides for each municipality to receive an equitable share. Oh, sorry. Each municipality then receives an equitable share in terms of the provisions of the Constitution. It's an unconditional allocation, and the purpose of it is to assist municipalities to basically provide basic services and also to assist them in their administration and governance costs. Now, the equitable share formula undergone a couple of changes since its inception in 1998, basically to take account of transformation. One can think of redemarcations and restructuring of the number of municipalities from about 800 to 280. Four municipalities, and later after the elimination of cross-boundary municipalities, to 283. Another change is also data updates. One thinks about the two census that we had recently, the 96 census and the 2001. And then new priorities that came about after the inception, like the free basic services that was introduced year 2000. The other slides just basically summarize some of the part, the evolution part of the equitable share formula since its inception. If I can jump into the components of the formula, it consists of a basic services component, a development component, institutional capacity, a revenue raising capacity correction and then a stabilization factor. Now the purpose of the basic services component is to enable municipalities to provide basic services and free basic services, and I think this is a very important point that it complements the municipal infrastructure grant. Some of the characteristics of this component is that it supports the municipal or assists the municipality to provide subsidies for free basic services only to poor households, and poor households are defined as those earning less than 800 rand per month. And the services, municipal services that are recognized are water reticulation, electricity, sanitation, and refuse removal. And then also a very important aspect of this component is that we provide a full subsidy to households with access to services, and then a partial subsidy for households without access to services. But at the end of the day, all households are being provided for. I will later on discuss the specific amount of the subsidies. This is just basically another summary of exactly how, when we calculate the basic services component of each municipality, what do we take into account. And as I explained just now, there are two subsidies, one is a full subsidy and the other one a partial subsidy. Just to mention as well that since 2006-07, we've included the municipal health services subsidy that goes to all households, not only poor households.
I'm told there's a big demonstration right here. People want to walk into this venue now, but they are saying they are holding a church service here now. Now, I'm not sure what we do, Mr. Sokoni. Okay. Do we? What part of the problem is that some people must catch their flight early? We also do not want to hold them back. Babu.
I would propose, I don't know, because I mean this formula is quite a bit of a complicated formula. In any case, even if we're going to run through it now very quickly, we won't really do a bit of justice on it. We can have another kind of session probably later in the year and go through it quite thoroughly. We can probably, I'm proposing, I know I'm taking a risk of being slapped, that we take the one question that was basically raised around the previous discussion and maybe just conclude out of that, I don't know.
Can we also say then, in the context of that, maybe we might also want to ask Mr. Fujile to send your team to the provinces, if we delegate from provinces would accept that, just for each province, so that it would be much more focused, as a discussion at that level. So that, let's then, you're right, let's deal with that last question, and then we will share. Yes, sir. Why not?
Thank you.
and shy amount. I thought we were just responding to the last question. So that to see if we would then say
yes. I'm sorry, man. We can't wait. The problem is that there's something called arrangement planning that we're talking about. Their planning was that the arrangement was that at one, they would come in. So people are just waiting. We can't keep them waiting. I'm not sure if we had intended to finish at one, because we could come back just for an hour and finish. They're not going to be long, they told me.
Can we please with people then to come back at 2? All right. Thank you.